They liked the fire he sensed. He thrust the torch into the mouth of one of the larger skulls, and made the shadows leap and dance on the wall behind him. The teeth were long, curving knives of black diamond. The flame of the torch was nothing to them. They had bathed in the heat of far greater fires. When he had moved away, Tyrion could have sworn that the beast's empty eye sockets had watched him go. There were 19 skulls. The oldest was more than 3,000 years old, the youngest a mere century and a half. The most recent were also the smallest. A match pair no bigger than mastiff skulls, and ugly misshapen. All that remained of the last two hatchlings born on Dragonstone. They were the last of the Targaryen dragons. Perhaps the last dragons anywhere. And they had not lived very long. From there, the skulls ranged upward in size to the three great monsters of song and story, the dragons that Aegon Targaryen and his sisters had unleashed on the Seven Kingdoms of old. The singers had given them the names of gods, Balerion, Meraxes, Vhagar. Tyrion had stood between their gaping jaws, wordless and awed. You could have ridden a horse down Vhagar's gullet, although you would not have ridden it out again. Meraxes was even bigger, and the greatest of them all, Balerion the Black Dread, could have swallowed an auric whole, or even one of the hairy mammoths said to roam the cold waste beyond the port of Ibn. Tyrion stood in a dank cellar for a long time, staring at Balerion's huge, empty-eyed skull, until his torch burned low, trying to grasp the size of the living animal, and to imagine how it must have looked when it spread its great black wings and swept across the skies, breathing fire. His own remote ancestor, King Loran of the Rock, had tried to stand against the fire when he joined with King Mern of the Reach to oppose the Targaryen conquest. That was close on 300 years ago, when the Seven Kingdoms were kingdoms, and not mere provinces of a greater realm. Between them, the two kings had 600 banners flying, 5,000 mounted knights, and 10 times as many free riders and men-at-arms. Aegon Dragonlord had perhaps a fifth of that number, the chronicler said, and most of those were conscripts from the ranks of the last king he had slain, their loyalties uncertain. The host met on the broad plains of the Reach, amidst golden fields of wheat ripe for harvest. When the two kings charged, the Targaryen army shivered and shattered and began to run. For a few moments, the chroniclers wrote, the conquest was at an end. But only for those few moments, before Aegon Targaryen and his sisters joined the battle. It was the only time that Vhagar, Meraxes, and Balerion were all unleashed at once. The singers called it the Field of Fire. Near 4,000 men had burned that day, among them King Mern of the Reach. King Loran had escaped and lived long enough to surrender, pledge his fealty to the Targaryens, and beget a son, for which Tyrion was duly grateful. "Why do you read so much?" Tyrion looked up at the sound of the voice. Jon Snow was standing a few feet away, regarding him curiously. He closed the book on a finger and said, "Look at me, and tell me what you see." The boy looked at him suspiciously. "Is this some kind of trick? I see you, Tyrion Lannister." Tyrion sighed. "Oh, you are remarkably polite for a bastard, Snow. What you see is a dwarf. You are what, 12?
14, the boy said.
14! And you're taller than I will ever be. My legs are short and twisted, and I walk with difficulty. I require a special saddle to keep me from falling off my horse. A saddle of my own design, you may be interested to know. It was either that or ride a pony. My arms are strong enough, but again, too short. I will never make a swordsman. Had I been born a peasant, they might have left me out to die or sold me to some slaver's grotesquerie. Alas, I was born a Lannister of Casterly Rock, and the grotesqueries are all the poorer. Things are expected of me. My father was the hand of the king for 20 years. My brother later killed that very same king, as it turns out, but life is full of these little ironies. My sister married the new king, and my repulsive nephew will be king after him. I must do my part for the honour of my house. Wouldn't you agree? Yet how? Well, my legs may be too small for my body, but my head is too large, although I prefer to think it's just large enough for my mind. I have a realistic grasp of my own strengths and weaknesses. My mind is my weapon. My brother has his sword, King Robert has his warhammer, and I have my mind. And a mind needs books, as a sword needs a whetstone, if it is to keep its edge. Tyrion tapped the leather cover of the book. That's why I read so much, Jon Snow. The boy absorbed that all in silence. He had the stark face, if not the name. Long, solemn, guarded, a face that gave nothing away. Whoever his mother had been, she had left little of herself in her son. "What are you reading about?" he asked. "Dragons," Tyrion told him. "What good is that? There are no more dragons," the boy said with the easy certainty of youth. "So they say," Tyrion replied. "Sad, isn't it? When I was your age, I used to dream of having a dragon of my own."
"You did?" the boy said suspiciously. Perhaps he thought Tyrion was making fun of him.
"Oh, yes. Even a stunted, twisted, ugly little boy can look down over the world when he's seated on a dragon's back." Tyrion pushed the bearskin aside and climbed to his feet. "I used to start fires in the bowels of Casterly Rock and stare at the flames for hours, pretending they were dragon fire. Sometimes I'd imagine my father burning. At other times, my sister."
Jon Snow was staring at him, a look equal parts horror and fascination. Tyrion guffawed.
Don't look at me that way, bastard. I know your secret. You've dreamt the same kind of dreams."
"No." Jon Snow was horrified. "I wouldn't."
"No, never."
Tyrion raised an eyebrow.
"Well, no doubt the Starks have been terribly good to you. I'm certain Lady Stark treats you as if you were one of her own. And your brother Rob, he's always been kind, and why not? He gets Winterfell, and you get the Wall. And your father, he must have good reasons for packing you off to the Night's Watch."
"Stop it," Jon Snow said, his face dark with anger. "The Night's Watch is a noble calling." Tyrion laughed.
"You're too smart to believe that. The Night's Watch is a midden heap for all the misfits of the realm. I've seen you looking at Yoren and his boys. Those are your new brothers, Jon Snow. How'd you like them, Sullen peasants, debtors, poachers, rapers, thieves, and bastards like you all wind up on the Wall, watching for Grumpkins and Snarks and all the other monsters your wet nurse warned you about. The good part is, there are no Grumpkins or Snarks, so it's scarcely dangerous work. The bad part is that you freeze your balls off. But since you're not allowed to breed anywhere, I don't suppose that matters."
"Stop it!" the boy screamed. He took a step forward, his hands coiling into fists close to tears. Suddenly, absurdly, Tyrion felt guilty. He took a step forward, intending to give the boy a reassuring pat on the shoulder or mutter some word of apology. He never saw the wolf, where it was, or how it came at him. One moment he was walking towards Snow, and the next he was flat on his back on a hard, rocky ground, the book spinning away from him as he fell, the breath going out of him at the sudden impact, his mouth full of dirt and blood and rotting leaves. As he tried to get up, his back spasmed painfully. He must have wrenched it in the fall. He ground his teeth in frustration, grabbed a root, pulled himself back to a sitting position. "Help me," he said to the boy, reaching up a hand. And suddenly the wolf was between them. He did not growl. The damn thing never made a sound. He only looked at him with those bright red eyes and showed him his teeth. And that was more than enough. Tyrion sagged back to the ground with a grunt. "Don't help me, then. I'll sit right here until you leave." Jon Snow stroked Ghost's thick white fur, smiling now. "Ask me nicely." Tyrion Lannister felt the anger coiling inside him and crushed it out with a will. It was not the first time in his life he had been humiliated, and it would not be the last. Perhaps he even deserved this. "I should be very grateful for your kind assistance, John," he said mildly. "Down, Ghost," the boy said. The direwolf sat on his haunches. Those red eyes never left Tyrion. John came around behind him, slid his hands under his arms, and lifted him easily to his feet. Then he picked up the book and handed it back. "Why did he attack me?" Tyrion asked, with a sidelong glance at the direwolf. He wiped blood and dirt from his mouth with the back of his hand. "Maybe he thought you were a grumpkin." Tyrion glanced at him sharply. Then he laughed. A short snort of amusement that came bursting out through his nose entirely without his permission. "Oh, gods," he said, choking on his laughter and shaking his head. "I suppose I do rather look like a grumpkin. What does he do to Snarks?" "You don't want to know." John picked up the wineskin and handed it to Tyrion. Tyrion pulled out the stopper, tilted his head, and squeezed a long stream into his mouth. The wine was cold fire as it trickled down his throat and warmed his belly. He held out the skin to Jon Snow. "Want some?" The boy took the skin and tried a cautious swallow. "It's true, isn't it?" he said when he was done. "What you said about the Night's Watch?" Tyrion nodded. Jon Snow set his mouth in a grim line. "If that's what it is, that's what it is." Tyrion grinned at him. "That's good, Bastard. Most men would rather deny a hard truth than face it." "Most men," the boy said, "but not you."
"No," Tyrion admitted. "Not me. I seldom ever dream of dragons anymore. There are no dragons."
He scooped up his fallen bearskin.
"Come, we'd better return to camp before your uncle calls the banners."
The walk back was short, but the ground was rough underfoot, and his legs were cramping badly by the time they got back. Jon Snow offered a hand to help him over a thick tangle of roots, but Tyrion shook him off. He would make his own way, as he had all his life. Still, the camp was a welcome sight. The shelters had been thrown up against the tumble-down wall of a long-abandoned holdfast, a shield against the wind. The horses had been fed, and a fire had been laid. Yoren sat on a stone, skinning a squirrel. The savory smell of stew filled Tyrion's nostrils. He dragged himself over to where his man Morik was tending the stewpot. Wordlessly, Morik handed him the ladle. Tyrion tasted and handed it back.
"More pepper," he said.
Benjen Stark emerged from the shelter he shared with his nephew.
"There you are, John, damn it. Don't go off like that by yourself. I thought the others had gotten you."
"It was the Grumpkins,"
Tyrion told him, laughing. Jon Snow smiled. Stark shot a baffled look at Yoren. The old man grunted, shrugged, and went back to his bloody work. The squirrel gave some body to the stew, and they ate it with black bread and hard cheese that night around their fire. Tyrion shared around his skin of wine, until even Yoren grew mellow. One by one, the company drifted off to their shelters and to sleep, all but Jon Snow, who had drawn the night's first watch. Tyrion was the last to retire, as always. As he stepped into the shelter his men had built for him, he paused and looked back at Jon Snow. The boy stood near the fire, his face still and hard, looking deep into the flames. Tyrion Lannister smiled sadly and went to bed. Catelyn. Ned and the girls were 8 days gone when Maester Luwin came to her one night in Bran's sick room, carrying a reading lamp and the books of account.
"It's past time that we reviewed the figures, my lady," he said. "You want to know how much the royal visit cost us?"
Catelyn looked at Bran in his sickbed and brushed his hair back off his forehead. It had grown very long, she realized. She would have to cut it soon. "I have no need to look at figures, Maester Luwin," she told him, never taking her eyes from Bran. "I know what the visit cost us. Take the books away."
"My lady, the king's party had healthy appetites. We must replenish our stores," before she cut him off.
"I said take the books away. The steward will attend to our needs."
"We have no steward," Maester Luwin reminded her. Like a little grey rat, she thought, he would not let go. "Poole went south to establish Lord Eddard's household at King's Landing."
Catelyn nodded absently. "Oh, yes, I remember." Bran looked so pale. She wondered whether she might move his bed under the window so he could get the morning sun. Maester Luwin set the lamp in a niche by the door and fiddled with its wick.
"There are several appointments that require your immediate attention, my lady. Besides the steward, we need a captain of the guards to fill Jory's place. A new master of horse..."
Her eyes snapped around and found him.
"A master of horse?"
Her voice was a whip. The maester was shaken.
"Yes, my lady. Hullan rode south with Lord Eddard, so my son lies here, broken and dying, Luwin, and you wish to discuss a new master of horse? Do you think I care what happens in the stables? Do you think it matters to me one whit? I would gladly butcher every horse in Winterfell with my own hands, if it would open Bran's eyes. Do you understand that? Do you?" He bowed his head. "Yes, my lady, but the appointments."
"I'll make the appointments," Rob said. Catelyn had not heard him enter, but there he stood in the doorway, looking at her. She had been shouting, she realized, with a sudden flush of shame. What was happening to her? She was so tired, and her head hurt all the time. Maester Luwin looked from Catelyn to her son.
"I have prepared a list of those we might wish to consider for the vacant offices," he said, offering Rob a paper plucked from his sleeve.
Her son glanced at the names. He'd come from outside, Catelyn saw. His cheeks were red from the cold, his hair shaggy and windblown. "Good men," he said. "We'll talk about them tomorrow." He handed back the list of names.
"Very good, my lord."
The paper vanished into his sleeve. "Leave us now," Rob said. Maester Luwin bowed and departed. Rob closed the door behind him and turned to her. He was wearing a sword, she saw. "Mother, what are you doing?" Catelyn had always thought Rob looked like her, like Bran and Rickon and Sansa. He had the Tully colouring, the auburn hair, the blue eyes. Yet now for the first time she saw something of Eddard Stark in his face, something as stern and hard as the North. "What am I doing?" she echoed, puzzled. "How can you ask that? What do you imagine I'm doing? Taking care of your brother and taking care of Bran. Is that what you call it? You haven't left this room since Bran was hurt. You didn't even come to the gate when Father and the girls went south. I said my farewells to them here, and watched them ride out from that window. She had begged Ned not to go, not now, not after what had happened. Everything had changed now. Couldn't he see that? It was no use. He had no choice, he had told her, and then he left, choosing. I can't leave him even for a moment, not when any moment could be his last. I have to be with him if... She took her son's limp hand, sliding his fingers through her own. He was so frail and thin, with no strength left in his hand, but she could still feel the warmth of life through his skin. Rob's voice softened. He's not going to die, Mother. Maester Lewin says the time of greatest danger has passed. And what if Maester Lewin is wrong? What if Bran needs me, and I'm not here? Rickon needs you, Rob said sharply. He's only three. He doesn't understand what's happening. He thinks everyone has deserted him, so he follows me around all day, clutching my leg and crying. I don't know what to do with him. He paused a moment, chewing on his lower lip, the way he'd done when he was little. Mother, I need you too. I'm trying, but I can't. I can't do it all by myself. His voice broke with sudden emotion, and Catelyn remembered that he was only 14. She wanted to get up and go to him, but Bran was still holding her hand, and she could not move. Outside the tower, a wolf began to howl. Catelyn trembled, just for a second. Bran's. Rob opened the window and let the night air into the stuffy tower room. The howling grew louder. It was a cold and lonely sound, full of melancholy and despair. Don't, she told him. Bran needs to stay warm. He needs to hear them sing, Rob said. Somewhere out there in Winterfell, a second wolf began to howl in chorus with the first. Then a third, closer. Shaggy Dog and Grey Wind, Rob said, as their voices rose and fell together. You can tell them apart if you listen close. Catelyn was shaking. It was the grief, the cold, the howling of the dire wolves. Night after night, the howling and the cold wind and the grey empty castle, on and on they went, never changing, and her boy lying there, broken. The sweetest of her children, the gentlest. Bran, who loved to laugh and climb and dream of knighthood. All gone now. She would never hear him laugh again. Sobbing, she pulled her hand free of his and covered her ears against those terrible howls. Make them stop, she cried. I can't stand it. Make them stop. Make them stop. Kill them all if you must. Just make them stop. She didn't remember falling to the floor, but there she was, and Rob was lifting her, holding her in strong arms. Don't be afraid, Mother. They would never hurt him. He helped her to a narrow bed in the corner of the sick room. Close your eyes, he said gently. Rest. Maester Lewin tells me you've hardly slept since Bran's fall. I can't, she wept. God's forgive me, Rob, I can't. What if he dies while I'm asleep? What if he dies? What if he dies? The wolves were still howling. She screamed and held her ears again. Oh, God, close the window! If you swear to me, you'll sleep. Rob went to the window, but as he reached for the shutters, another sound was added to the mournful howling of the dire wolves. Dogs, he said, listening. All the dogs are barking. They've never done that before. Catelyn heard his breath catch in his throat. When she looked up, his face was pale in the lamplight. Fire, he whispered. Fire, she thought, then Bran. Help me, she said urgently, sitting up. Help me with Bran. Rob did not seem to hear her. The library tower's on fire, he said. Catelyn could see the flickering reddish light through the open window now. She sagged with relief. Bran was safe. The library was across the bailey. There was no way the fire would reach them here. Thank the gods, she whispered.
Rob looked at her as if she'd gone mad. "Mother, stay here. I'll come back as soon as the fire's out." He ran out. She heard him shout to the guards outside the room, heard them descending together in a wild rush, taking the stairs two and three at a time.